This is a language warning.
The J Files on Double J.
Most of these records that I've made are just for that moment. I never go back and listen to the records. I've never listened to any of my records. You know, once they come out, it's business.
It's the motherfucking Eagle Double J.
Snoop Dogg.
You know I'm hopping with the D-R-E.
Here's one of modern music's biggest success stories. A rap pioneer who evolved production methods, bringing gangster rap and G-funk to the forefront. He's a record producer and executive, working with and helping to develop some of the world's biggest names in hip-hop. He's also a business mogul, an entrepreneur, and a rock and roll Hall of Famer. He is the one and only Dr. Dre. He's also a complicated figure, one with many flaws, and while we'll look at his impact on music, we can't ignore his past. Dr. Dre has faced trouble with the law and allegations of violence against women. He has violated probation, served time in federal prison, settled civil cases out of court, and in 2015 addressed his past actions with considerable remorse. These are all parts that make up the story of Dr. Dre, and one half does not negate the other. When I say that Dr. Dre has worked with and helped develop some of the biggest names in hip-hop, I mean it.
One, two, three into the four. Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the door. Ready to make an entrance, so back on up.
Cause you know we're about to rip shit up.
Give me the microphone. From the late 90s through the 2000s, Dr. Dre experienced a production purple patch. If you were clubbing around this time, you'll immediately recognize some of these dance floor belters by Snoop Dogg, Tupac, Mary J. Blige, Busta Rhymes, 50 Cent, Eve, and Eminem. And he's still nurturing emerging talent. So we're going to look at three artists, including one Australian, whose work Dr. Dre has had a hand in. Before we get to that, though, it's important that we look at the foundations on which he was able to build this illustrious career. Andre Young, a.k.a. Dr. Dre, started out as a DJ in Los Angeles. He called himself the Master of Mixology. And while his rise to prominence came via NWA, he was in a very different group before that.
LA is the place for you to be, to witness Dr. Dre in surgery. He has a PhD in mixology, to cut on the wheel so viciously. Boom, boom, goes the beat to rock the nation. Freaks receive mouth-to-mouth resuscitation.
The world-class Wrecking Crew was an electro-hop group who dressed like Prince and channeled some real funkadelic vibes. In the early 80s, they played club nights around LA and Dr. Dre was their beatmaster.
Dr. Dre, Dr. Dre, Dr. Dre, Dr. Dre, 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 Dr. Dre, Dr. Dre, Dr. Dre, 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 Dr. Dre, Dr. Dre, Dr. Dre, Dr.
Eventually, Dr. Dre and Wrecking Crew bandmate DJ Yella branched out, ditching the glitzy sequin suits and joining forces with Eazy-E and Ice Cube to form NWA.
Straight out of Compton, crazy motherfucker named Ice Cube. From the gang called Niggas with Attitudes. When I'm called off, I got a sawed off. Squeeze the trigger and bodies are hauled off.
In 1988, NWA released their debut album, Straight Outta Compton, and it was a monster. It sold millions of copies worldwide, put West Coast hip hop on the map, and launched the careers of Eazy-E, Dr. Dre, and Ice Cube. Full of expletives and violent lyrical content, it's also an album that's credited with pioneering the gangster rap genre. The first single off the album was F the Police.
Fuck the police coming straight from the underground. A young nigga got it bad because I'm brown. And not the other color, so police think they have the authority to kill a minority. Fuck that shit because I ain't the one for a punk motherfucker with a badge and a gun to be beaten on. And thrown in jail, we can go toe-to-toe in the middle of a sale. Fucking with me because I'm a teenager with a little bit of gold and a pager. Searching my car, looking for the product, thinking every nigga is selling.
selling narcotics.
It's one of the most powerful songs ever written about racial profiling and police brutality, but it nearly didn't see the light of day. During the Take 5 Live at the Sydney Opera House in 2018, Ice Cube spoke to Zan Roe about why Dr. Dre was hesitant about doing the song.
He didn't say that I went too far. He said he didn't want to do the song because he had to go turn himself in to the county jail every weekend. And he was like, look, man, I got to deal with these damn sheriffs. And I damn sure don't want them to hear that I got a song out called Fuck the Police. So we ain't doing this one. So that was his reason. So I kind of was like, damn, it's such a great song. You know, I just put it in my notebook. And then I really forgot about it. I went off to school and I was looking through my notebooks. And I went to school in Phoenix, Arizona. Make a long story short, went to school in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm out there going through my raps. I pull it out my notebook. I rip it out. I ball it up. And I say to my friend, I said, well, Dre don't want to do this one, so I'm going to throw it away. And he went in the trash, pulled it out, straightened it back up. He was like, hell no, you got to do this one. So I was like, Dre is the Wizard of Oz. He is the Pied Piper. He say, don't do it. We not doing it. So I just put it in my notebook. Just let it sit there. So when it was time to do it, the NWA record, because they was working on Easy Record when I showed them the rhyme. When it was time to work on the NWA record, we was looking for concepts. And I was like, yo, man. I show Easy my concept. Easy was like, we doing this shit. We doing this one. Dre, nah, we doing it. Dre, by then, he didn't have to turn himself into the jail no more, so he was more open. He was like, yeah, it is a good concept. So that's kind of how that ended up coming about.
I'm so happy you kept it.
Now, at the time, Triple J really championed the song, and it ruffled a lot of feathers. It even caused a station-wide strike action in a moment that will forever connect Australian music to fans of NWA.
In 1989, Triple J was the only radio station in the world playing NWA's Fuck the Police. It happily bounced across the airwaves for 6 months until a couple of politicians and the West Australian police noticed, and someone in a suit on the top floor of the ABC pulled it off the air.
On Tuesday of last week, ABC management...
Why did it take 6 months for this song to be deemed offensive?
Controversial track.
Triple J's On the Nose tried to find the answer.
Niggers with attitude.
Hi, I'm Chris Bullock, and this program is On the Nose, daily current affairs with a youthful sniff of investigation. Coming up, what's in a word? A serious look at words that offend different people.
Fuck the police coming straight from the underground. A young nigga got it bad because I'm brown and not the other color, so police...
A minute before that story went to air, we were told that it shouldn't go to air. Andy, the station manager, came in and said, we've been told we can't run it. And I said, well, look, we've got a minute to go. That story is on that tape machine there. If you want to take it off, take it off. But I'm not going to. So it went ahead, and it was played. And as it was being played, I vividly remember Andy giving the air a little revolutionary punch. We did feel strongly that it was an issue in keeping with what the station was all about. And it wasn't just about the song itself, I think. You know, around that time, we had a ridiculous police minister who reckoned that the New South Wales police force was the best in the world. Subsequent royal commissions have shown, actually, that the cops weren't only corrupt, they were actually organising crime.
Disciplinary action being taken against a Triple J member of staff.
We knew it was going to cause trouble.
Editorial freedom in ABC radio is not at issue.
Anyway, so we thought, as you do, we're pretty smart, and went down to the pub Triple J used then to celebrate, and about 2 hours later, Marius Webb another manager up the chain came in with a letter from management saying that you, Nick Franklin, executive producer, are suspended. And, you know, the staff were good. They went on strike about it. And also, they did probably the longest seg the station's ever had in its whole history, because when they actually went on strike about this, they played another NWA song. 24 hours straight, and they did it 360 times in a row. Can't have been beaten, can it, anyway?
After the success of NWA, the various members pursued solo projects. Ice Cube left in 89 after a royalty dispute and went on to have massive success of his own.
Freaking niggas every way like MJ. I can't believe today was a good day.
Eazy-E released a solo album which was produced by Dre.
Well, I'm Eazy-E, I got bitches galore. You might have a lot of bitches, but I got much more. With my super.
And in 92, Dr. Dre himself released one of the defining hip-hop records of all time, The Chronic.
Yeah, hell yeah. Know what I'm saying?
Ice Cube also spoke to Zanro about sampling in the early days and how The Chronic played an important role in the development of hip-hop.
We didn't have them instruments. We didn't have no horns, had no guitars, had no drums, bass line, none of that. None of us knew how to play, nothing. But we had these records we liked, and we had these parts of these records that we loved, and we took it and made like a gumbo. Gumbo is, it's a southern dish. You find all the good shit you can find, you put it in the pot, let it cook. And eat, put it on some rice, and it's over. So it was like being able to go into, you know, sneak into your parents' record collection and pull those funky records out, take about three or four of them, have them under your arm. You're gonna make a whole record with just these four records, you know. And you start piecing them together and sampling. And it was a lot of criticism, you know. It's not real music. You're taking people's music. And it was really, you know, what we call the Wild West back then. Anything goes. You know nothing about publishing and write down. We learned real quick, though. We learned real quick, because when these people came after us and told us that we want 30% of that song, then they start getting crazy. We want 80% of that song. Sometimes they would say we want 100% of that song. So thank God for Dr. Dre and The Chronic album, which took us out of sampling. It took us out of that sampling era. So now we do find bass players. We do find musicians, horn players, drummers. We do find the talented people that we need to make this music. And to be honest, it is a better way. You know, sampling was fun. We had to make do with it. We didn't really know what we was doing. We was creating on the fly. But it is better to create your own and not sample as much from the past.
After the success of The Chronic, Dr. Dre signed a young rapper from Detroit called Eminem. It was a signing that would in turn have a huge impact on the life of Australian producer M Phases. These might be the...
Hey, what's up? This is Mark, a.k.a. M Phases, over here in L.A. in my studio. I first heard about Dr. Dre via NWA, I had a dubbed copy of Straight Out of Compton that I copied off a friend's older cousin.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
It was the coolest thing I've ever heard. I mean, just hearing swearing on a song and not singing was so rebellious to me. I had to partake.
Straight out of Compton, crazy motherfucker named Ice Cube, from the gang called Niggas with Attitudes.
I remember going to England with my mother, who's from Manchester originally. We went to Manchester to visit my grandma and grandpa. And I think I might have been, I'm guessing here, but I think maybe 12 years old. And we went to HMV, and basically, you know, the record stores in England were far ahead in terms of the stuff they had hip-hop-wise. Like, we didn't really have much on the Gold Coast. So seeing this section at HMV in Manchester just blew my 12-year-old brain. I couldn't believe there was so much rap music available to me.
One, two. Bring it to the folks. Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the dope.
My responsible mother and grandparents allowed me to buy The Chronic by Dr. Dre at 12 years old. So I took it home back to my grandma's house and put it in the Walkman and just listened to it. And it felt like I was watching a movie. It was incredible. The soundscapes, the mixing, the rapping, Snoop Dogg, hearing Snoop Dogg for the first time. That was it. Like, Dre was God at that point.
It's like I'm in the dirt, digging up old hurt. Tried everything to get my mind off you, it won't work. All it takes is one song on the radio, you're right back on it, reminding me all over again how you fucking just brushed me off and left me so burnt.
Fast forward, a bunch of years later, I started working with a producer called S1, who's a big producer from the States, and we're good friends, and he had me working on some ideas for him. And basically one of those ideas turned into the Eminem song Bad Guy off his Marshall Mathers LP2.
You ruined mine, but you seem to be doing fine. Well, I've never recovered, but tonight betcha that what you're about to go through's tougher than anything I ever have suffered. Can't think of a better way to define poetic justice. Can I hold grudges?
That was really cool, you know, and apparently Dre and Rick Rubin worked on it. You know, they helped out with the production. I think they stripped off a lot of stuff and basically produced the song up to where it was. And I didn't get to meet Dr. Dre, unfortunately, but I did get to meet Eminem when he was on tour in Australia. Very, very briefly, but yeah, I was a little starstruck, to say the least.
He's also mentored other big names in hip-hop today. In 1996, when Tupac and Dr. Dre were in Compton filming the video clip for California Love, they had no idea that a kid called Kendrick Lamar was looking on in awe from the sidelines.
My nigga said he wanna fly out to get him some 3 W's, only for a 3-day run. Bitch, take the motherfucking pennies off, you ain't no none shit. I be living in the sky every time I ride by them.
Kendrick told Richard Kingsmill about it in 2012, in the lead up to his record Good Kid, Mad City, which was then released on Dr. Dre's Aftermath.
I seen him on a video set with Tupac, Dr. Dre and Tupac, California Love video set. They was in Compton. No, it was just a spectrum of people out there watching them as they shoot this video, and I was one of the kids that was out there, and on my father's neck, you know, being inspired, you know, that these people that I see on TV every day actually came back, you know, to the city and showed their faces, letting us know that they was real. So eventually it probably inspired me to be a, you know, artist, who knows, you know, but I knew that was a monumental day for me.
Did you actually get to speak to him that day?
No, I didn't. I probably wouldn't even know what to say to him. I was probably like 8-7 years old, so looking at these grown men in front of a camera, I wouldn't know what to say.
Sure. He's obviously been working with you closely the last couple of years on your career. What's it like working with him now?
Great feeling. You know, inspired me to be a perfectionist, inspired me to go harder, you know, be a better artist, and off the record, be a better person. So it's a great thing.
Another artist who caught Dre's ear was Anderson .Paak. In 2015, when Dre released his third studio album, Compton, his first album in 16 years, there was one name that just kept appearing on the record.
These old sneakers, faded blue jeans, no tricks, no gimmicks. I'll be stomping down, 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 demons. Rolling up trees in the belly of the beast where the people disagree.
Compton was released in conjunction with the film Straight Outta Compton, which told the story of NWA.
The film inspired Dre to write another record, and Anderson .Paak was one of the many artists he collaborated with for the album. Richard Kingsmill spoke with Anderson .Paak at the time about how the collaboration came about and what it was like working with Dr. Dre.
When I went in, lo and behold, the first two people I meet were Dr. Dre and DOC, and they're watching the playoffs and they're just chilling, and I met both of them, chopped it up for a little bit, and we went into the studio and met Justice and Inez, and they were telling me how they loved the song Suede that I had out, and they've been playing it for weeks, and they were excited. They wanted to know if I wanted to work on something for a Dre project, and I was like, no, absolutely, let's do it. And they started playing Suede, and then they said, you know, they wanted Dre to hear the song. Dre hadn't heard it yet. So Dre comes in, and they play the song for him, and then he says, play it again, and they play it again, and he says, play it again, and they play it again. And then by the third time, he's like, yo, let's work. And, you know, the DOC's in there, and everybody's in there. Exhibit comes through, and at the end of that night, we had All in the Days Work. That was the first song we did. And we did most of it the first night. And we kept building on it after that. Just, you know, every other day I was over there working on that and then working on more tracks. And we just had a great chemistry in the studio and still do. We just did something the other night. And it's just like, it's so much fun because he's had such a, he really inspired and a really great creative creative point right now. Both of us are excited to just, there's no feelings, you know. We're excited to see how far we can take it, you know, and how left. So that's just amazing to do with someone like Dre, and that's pretty much what I've been doing my whole career, but just now to be doing it with a weathered producer, it's just wow. So learning a lot of things from him and learning his ear, and we're just like going back and forth off each other, and we're creating some good stuff. So, that's how that happened.
And then to end up on so many of the tracks on Compton, that must have been mind blowing.
Yeah, I mean, I was just as surprised as everybody else, dude. I couldn't say anything, couldn't talk about it, and I didn't start to really get a grasp of what the project was until about halfway in when I realized, okay, I can get this. It's gonna be his album, and this might really come out. And you know, so up until the pre-order came out, that's when I was like, okay, this is real. And I just was just amazed. A lot of the stuff we did all made it, and then they did a revision, and the other pre-order came, they revised it, and then I went from being on 4 tracks or to 3 tracks to 6 tracks, and I was just like, man, what's happening right now? And it makes me smile.
I'm Gemma Pike. That's it for this episode of The J Files. Thanks for listening. Please make sure to subscribe and have a scroll back for other episodes for the stories behind the music that you love.
Hope you're ready for the next episode. Hey. Smoke weed every day.
The J Files.